and welcome to a new episode of the Computomics podcast. With me today is one of Computomics' own, Jörg Hagmann, the product manager for Computomics Pantograph. Jörg, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
It's awesome to have you and to get to ask you a whole lot of interesting questions about the Pantograph. Before we do, though, you know, we start with an icebreaker. And I've heard that you're not only a big fan of KSC, which is a football club, a soccer club, but also you're a real fiend in the office tisch kicker or table football matches. So I'm curious, do you have a tip maybe for someone like me who really is not good at all at tisch kicker? How to succeed when you're trying to play against your office mates?
Oh, yeah. Well, first you have to pick the right team. So there is a white and a blue shirt. That is the team colors of my favorite team. That you have to pick first, of course. And then you only have to be quick and concentrated, kind of. So I'm also not very good in that, but it's a whole lot of fun to play with the colleagues.
I bet it is. Maybe I can take on at least the tip of wearing something blue because I love blue.
Yeah,
not so sure about all the other technical aspects of table football. But yeah, let's actually jump into other technical aspects. The project that you're managing, the Pantograph, has to do with pangenomes and genome graphs. For those in our audience that maybe aren't so familiar with these terms, can you explain what are they?
Sure. Yes. Yeah, so a pangenome is basically a collection of whole DNA genome sequences of multiple individuals, basically. Very simple. And typically in a pangenome, they are aligned to each other. So basically you write them on top of each other and so that the same sequences are on top, and then you better see the differences in the DNA sequence between them, right? So they are typically produced by sequencing technology. So since 20 years, we have a next generation sequencing technology. This is basically having small pieces from a genome sequenced, and then these small pieces have to put together into a bigger genome, have to be assembled like a puzzle into a bigger genome again. And this technology revolutionized many aspects in research, in genomics, in diagnostics, and in understanding biology. But it was based on single base pair exchanges, so single nucleotide polymorphisms, SNPs, SNPs, because they are most abundant, and they only screen one base at a time. And now sequencing technology advances, and now we can more feasibly, more affordably capture whole genome sequences from the start of a chromosome to the end of the chromosome. And that spurred basically now the generation of whole genome assemblies, which can then be compared and stored in pangenomes, right? Mm-hmm. And so with basically the sequencing technology advances and also advances in bioinformatic tools, we can now quite commonly, easily, or produce pangenomes, and this field is growing now.
I have a sense already, but maybe you can clarify what are the benefits of studying pangenomes as opposed to the base pair versions, the earlier looking at simple genomes that you were describing. So, what's the benefit of that?
Yes. So, if you have the whole genomes aligned to each other, you can much better identify not only single DNA changes, but also very long stretches that are missing in one genome compared to the other, stretches that are inserted compared to the other genomes, or that are maybe duplicated, right? You see a lot of also copy number variants, a lot of genes in many plant species, for example, that occur in multiple copies, and that can change also in the evolution. So pangenomes, offer now a much more complete picture of the genetic variation, right? Of complex mm-hmm. regions and of larger structural variants, as you call these deletions and insertions.
So we're basically gaining a better understanding. I'm thinking of the human pangenome project. That's the context where I've heard the term most commonly as a lay person. So is that kind of what we're trying to do, right?
Yeah, so the goal is basically having a complete representation of the genetics of the human beings, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look only at one genome, then of course you cannot find all the variation that is out there in other individuals. For example, mm-hmm. In the reference genome, some parts of one individual, some parts are missing. And of course, if other individuals have these sequences, they're inaccessible to analyze, basically, right? Mm-hmm. It's clearer, basically, in plants, where you also have much higher genetic diversity. Here, a lot of sequences that are not shared between many plants of the same species contain disease resistance genes. So basically, this is a means of plants to protect themselves from pathogens. And of course, in different regions where the plants grow, different pathogens can be prominent, right? Mm-hmm. And so plants have adapted to different environments by capturing basically genes that are not commonly present in the whole population.
Mm-hmm. So just to make sure I understand it correctly, would it be correct to say that unlike the human genome, these parts that are unique maybe in a couple of the genomes that are represented in the pangenome are illegible, whereas in plants, those are actually valuable pieces that we're trying to focus on because they contain, for example, these disease resistance traits?
Yes, that is I guess true. So just to name a number, so researchers have analyzed over 3,000 lines of in rice, mm-hmm. and they found over 12,000 novel genes that are not represented in a reference genome. So reference genome wow. is typically a representative genome mm-hmm. of a species, and in rice there is a huge amount of just the gene pool can be extended by looking at more and more individuals, right? Mm-hmm. 12,000 genes is half of the human number of genes, right? And also in soybean other studies found that 40,000 genes show presence-absence variation. So in at least one soybean line out of 30 approximately, a gene was missing, basically.
Wow, that's very exciting, and I'm sure that's part of what you're trying to exploit with this technology that Computomics developed, the pantograph. I know it's been named one of the top innovative products in 2023 by SeedWorld. So let us know, what is pantograph, as much as you can publicly reveal. Like, if I were interested in this, what does that product do?
Yeah, so simply speaking, our ambition, our vision is very easy to put into words. Basically, we'd like to be the most comprehensive browser of pangenomes available today, right? Or basically, we like to have the Google Maps of genomics, of pangenomes, right? As Google Maps maps the landscape, the world, we like to navigate the landscape of DNA, actually. So in pantograph, that's a fully interactive browser that lets you explore all kinds of genetic variation, right? From these single nucleotide polymorphisms, single base pair exchanges, up to these large missing pieces or inserted pieces or duplications in one framework, right? Mm-hmm. Typical tools only focus on one of those kinds. And we not only let the user browse these pangenomes, but also include phenotypic data, phenotypic variation data, alongside the genetic tracks, if you like. And so we offer that the user can sort these assemblies by phenotypic values. The user can also cluster the genomes by phenotypes, and in this way compare subpopulation-based phenotypic distributions. And we also want to have it as a comprehensive genomic resource. So we can also plug in functional annotation about genes. So what are the likely function of genes? Which protein domains do they have? Which homologous genes do they have? We can plug in information about QTLs, variants. And newest addition is basically that you can also show not only the latest sequencing data, which is whole genome assemblies, pangenomes, but also the traditionally or most commonly used genetic data, namely whole genome sequencing data from this next generation sequencing technology, as well as marker data from SNP chips, for example, which is a very cost-efficient way in finding out the genetic makeup of individuals. And this data, commonly produced by plant breeders, for example, can also be anchored to the pangenomes. Phenotypic data, all the functional annotation can be plugged in, and all of that can be investigated then in one framework.
When you say can be, is that something that you provide as part of Pantograph, or is that something that those who use Pantograph, those who buy this product from you, can do on their own? For example, if they had their, you know, they might have some individual research that they would want to add to combine the two. Would that be possible?
Yes, absolutely. So we can actually also provide Pantograph with basically only publicly available data and combine it with then users or customers' own data, proprietary genomes, for example, or genetic sequencing data. Yeah, and Pantograph also offers a way to update the data so the user can upload their own data, which is then refreshed in the browser. Yeah,
that's amazing. And I love the comparison that you made. I mean, it's maybe natural to compare it to either Google Maps or another kind of browser-based mapping system. But with that breadth of functions, it is very similar. You can't just look places up, speaking very, very simply, but you can also maybe cluster all the, on Google Maps, it might be all the Italian restaurants, right? And you can look for very specific traits, cluster them, and even maybe browse all the reviews and add new ones. That's kind of how I would continue the metaphor you introduced. Is that a valid representation?
Yes, absolutely. So if certain genes are the Italian restaurants and you like to compare them, you like to see the genetic variation between them, and the reviews would be then the phenotypic values, right? So this gene, the variation in this gene have maybe an effect on the plant height. And so now the user can, by sorting, clustering, identify which variation has the most beneficial impact, for example, on a trait.
I mean, the advantages are very obvious, right? You can really, I assume most of your users have certain profiles and that they're looking for genetic profiles. And so they can actually just plug those in and sort and then work with the results from that search, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What would be a prominent use case for Pantograph if you have one? Maybe a very concrete example of something that you or one of your partners has done with Pantograph.
Yeah, so as a bit mentioned before, people, because of technology, have looked only at these small scale variation. And now with pangenomes, we are able to look at larger scale variation, right? And it has been shown that a larger scale variation, so-called structural variation or SVs, have also a huge impact on agronomically traits, for example, in plants, but also in human disease. So, for example, if we stay to human, 3,000 rare diseases, for 3,000 rare diseases, we don't have a genetic basis yet to discover it, right? So there's, I think, also still a lot to discover on those variants that have been previously hard to detect. And that can be a goal of, for example, plant breeders to not only focus on single base pair exchanges for explaining their traits, but also to look for structural variants. And so in one of our users used Pantograph to investigate the regions that they identified before as being associated to a trait, to identify genetic markers that are predictive basically for that trait. They focus on SNPs, but now with Pantograph, they can also look for structural variants for these larger ones in those certain areas, right? And then they can extract basically the sequences, make markers from the sequences, and then they can extend their marker panel to screen plants for that particular trait very early in the breeding process, so that they can filter out the non-beneficial plants very early before they plant out a lot of plants in the field, which is very costly and work intense, of course. Yeah. So here in the pre-breeding step, as you call it, Pantograph helps you in identifying novel markers predictive for traits. Of course, another use case is now genome engineering technology is now, of course, widespread. And Pantograph can also help in identifying gene editing targets, right? If you have specific regions as well associated to traits, you can look into Pantograph in maybe a lot of publicly available data included there and see which variation already exists, which is already known, right? And then maybe focus on that variation first to alter rather than basically randomly select sequences within a gene of interest or, yeah, doing a lot of alterations, right? Untargeted. So also in selecting gene editing targets, we see that Pantograph can be of great help, as well as in general, basically in supporting fine mapping of traits, right? Because you can really go down from larger regions where you see structural variants and zoom in until a single nucleotide level to spot also smaller variation and to browse all the genes that are within your region of interest, basically.
That's amazing. So if you had to put it in one sentence, what does Pantograph visualize?
So Pantograph is based on a data structure which is called Pangenome Graph, which is basically a compressed version of all the DNA sequences, of all the DNA whole genome assemblies, actually, right? Because a Pangenome Graph is basically, if I may use an analogy, so from our office, we look at train tracks. So if you basically have a whole genome assembly as one large train track where a train can walk the sequences, right? Then if you have another individual with the same size genome, you can build another large track, right, next to it. But actually, we humans, we have basically 97-98% of all our sequences in common. So we don't need to build two separate tracks for two individual genomes, right? We, in most times, 97-98%, one track is sufficient to represent the same sequence, and only the 2-3% you have to introduce some switches to the two lanes of the tracks, right? And this structure, having shared sequences stored only once, but only storing the alternative sequences in separate tracks, in separate branches, this is called a pangenome graph, right? Mm-hmm. And there you, of course, save a lot of tracks, save a lot of disk space in storing a pangenome. And this is the basis internally, if you wish, for a pantograph, together with all the data that pantograph can also show, like multiple genome annotations, functional annotation, whole genome sequencing data, phenotypic values, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I assume that maybe a few of our listeners have perked up their ears if they haven't already heard about this product and are now interested in, well, how can we get access? Like, if I now wanted to get pantograph, because it sounds like it's going to be super helpful to me, how can I get it? How can I use it? Who do I have to call?
Yeah, you just contact Computomics or me directly, actually. And then we, of course, do an introductory call where we go through the features, go through the details in how to install pantograph. We have two options. We can install it at the customer's premises, but mm-hmm. we can also host it on Computomics servers, where all that is needed to browse the pangenomes is basically a typical web browser, right? It's a web browser-based implementation. All the data is stored on specific servers, but everything can also be run in the cloud.
That sounds almost too easy. Maybe you want to share your email address, so whoever might be interested has a way to just pop that in right away, and we'll also obviously add that into the show notes.
Yeah, you can basically, it's easier to remember, maybe write to info@computomics.com.
Perfect. And then we'll add your personal email in the show notes. So maybe just as a kind of fun little exercise in the end, is there a trivia or some fun fact that you'd like to share with us? Because you're working with so much data, I'm sure there's a way that you can provide that could be used at a party or something like that.
So the human genome sequence, right, is 3.4 billion bases long. Mm-hmm. So if one sequence is only 1 centimeter long, mm-hmm. guess how long the train track will be? It will be...
Oh, please tell me. Don't put me on the spot and make me do math in my head live on a podcast.
It will be 35,000 kilometers long. So it's 3/4 around the globe for a single human genome, which we have in each single cell of our body, actually. So it's really amazing. It's really that's what fascinates me so much about biology, that so much information is stored in such a small place.
Yes, and it also stored so elegantly, and accessed so elegantly. That's a beautiful trivia fun fact to tack on at the end.
Yeah, and that it's also the whole DNA is so protected so nicely, and so huge amount of DNA we have, but we still get 70, 80 years old in average, and can get over 100 years old, right? So mm-hmm. DNA is so much protected from environmental cues that there's so much DNA in our humans, but it's so nicely protected that we can grow so old. That's also very fascinating for me.
Feels like that could be a topic for another episode of this podcast, or maybe a more philosophical take of this podcast. Jörg, thank you so much for all of that and the additional trivia information. I look forward to talking again at some point in the future.
Thank you very much, Anna.
Thank you for listening in today. Want to learn more? Then check out our show notes and more info on computomics.com. If you have questions or want to propose a next guest, please reach out to us at podcast@computomics.com.